And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you, along with Bonnie Berman. Today we discuss the movement to revise what some regard as archaic alimony laws, particularly those adjudicated permanently. Joining us is financial advisor Alan Frischer. He's the founder of FAR, an acronym for Florida Alimony Reform. And Mr. Frischer joins us by phone from Brevard County. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And in the studio with us is Debbie Leff Israel of Weston. We'll hear her story about the Second Wife's Club. Welcome to you, Ms. Israel.
Thank you.
And also with us is family law and divorce attorney Barry Finkel of Fort Lauderdale. We'll hear his input on the subject as well. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Finkel.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll start with Alan Frischer. Alan, tell us about FAR, Florida Alimony Reform, when and why it was founded, and who it's comprised of.
Florida Alimony Reform actually has been going as a corporate entity since about 2010. I've been involved in it really for maybe 4 or 5 years prior to that. It's comprised of about 3,000 family members right now, all having to do with paying alimony, whether it be permanent or other forms of alimony, in the state of Florida. And what we're trying to do is actually reform the current alimony laws to make them fair for people who have to pay alimony, as well as people receiving the alimony. And that's really it in a nutshell.
Okay, and is FAR opposed to alimony?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, again, what we tried to do is make it fair for the receivers and the payers. We believe that there's a certain amount of alimony that needs to be paid, especially to get people back rehabilitated, back in the workforce. What we are having a big problem with, though, is the permanency of alimony, where people have to pay alimony for the rest of their lives, even through retirement years.
Okay, would you explain that for us, the meaning of permanent alimony?
Permanent alimony is literally what it says. It's permanent for the rest of your life. You have to pay a certain amount of alimony. It's at the discretion of a judge for the rest of your life until somebody either remarries, until the recipient remarries, or until somebody dies. Then it ends.
Okay.
Family law and divorce attorney Barry Finkel, your views on the subject.
Well, there already has been a tremendous amount of reform that has been enacted by the legislature in the last few years in the form of supportive relationship laws that have come into effect. For example, the courts now allow people to go back to court, paying spouses to go back to court to try to eliminate or terminate or modify alimony awards if the recipient spouse is now residing with somebody. That's really a need-based determination, and you look and see if somebody really needs the alimony anymore. With regard to permanent alimony, we as divorce lawyers typically advise our clients that when they hear the term permanent alimony, it never really means permanent alimony because it is modifiable. It doesn't end only upon remarriage or when the recipient spouse dies. The recipient spouse or the paying spouse has a right to look to modify that alimony if there's a change of circumstances that may occur. And retirement is one of those change of circumstances that is a recognized modification grounds where the paying spouse can come back and say, I'm now 65 years old, and this is an industry that I work in that is typical for somebody at that age to retire. And the court can then use that as a grounds, and it is a valid grounds to modify or terminate an alimony award.
But that's up to the judge.
Yes.
Do judges need to be held more accountable?
I think the judges do a wonderful job in their alimony determinations. I think that there are not the types of abuses that we are hearing from those people that want alimony reform. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I don't see those abuses. I think there is a tremendous amount of consistency, and I think that the answer is to find better judges, if that's the concern, in order to avoid inconsistent results. Obviously, you may have situations where you have two judges looking at the same set of facts that may come up with wildly different results, but that's a situation that can be addressed in other ways. Not by imposing hard and fast rigid rules regarding when alimony terminates and what type of alimony can be awarded and what the amount of alimony that can be assessed.
And let's bring Debbie Leff Israel into it. You're the chair of the Florida Second Wives Club.
Yes.
Okay, tell us about that.
We're a group that started as a result of these laws that we feel are very unfair. One of the reasons they're unfair is currently a second spouse's income can be considered in an upward modification of alimony or the denial of a downward modification of alimony. So it is our goal to make the laws more fair. I am in a situation, Will, where I won't get married right now because I do not want any chance of my paycheck going out towards the former wife.
Okay, and
be a little more specific about that.
Well, if she claims a higher need for alimony, and they can look at the family income of a new couple and decide, well, there's a greater ability to pay. Alimony is based on need and ability to pay. And although what Mr. Finkel says in theory is true, theoretically, the actual reality and outcomes that I see all the time, because I'm privy to people confiding their cases in me, are very, very different than what is happening in theory. Two examples I can think of right away. Donna Policastro, I just did a press release on her. She is now essentially paying her husband's alimony because he's retired and he can't afford to pay it. The judge even noted in the case that she's providing a home for him, et cetera, et cetera. Another case where there was cohabitation, and the judge acknowledged the cohabitation. This is a case of Eric Pearson on the west coast of Florida. The judge acknowledged a supportive relationship in excess of the amount of alimony that was granted, and yet he did not she did not terminate the alimony. So clearly the laws aren't working the way they're supposed to be working, and that's why they need to be fixed. The reforms that happened in the past did not go far enough.
So, Alan Frischer, what would you recommend the state legislature take up this March?
Well, you know, there are certain areas, and while Mr. Finkel indeed, you know, is correct that there was some reform that happened back in 2010, 2011, that reduced the chances that permanent alimony would be awarded. Unfortunately, it didn't go far enough. Permanent alimony is still awarded for marriages under 10 years, and it is something that is very, very difficult, if not impossible, to change, even when there is a substantial change of circumstance, as he pointed out. We don't see those changes happening. We don't see the judges eliminating alimony. They may reduce the alimony in certain circumstances, but even then, it's very, very difficult because the criteria, as Debbie pointed out, is the ability to pay on one end, and typically that translates to, well, do you have a source of income or assets that can be converted to income in any way, shape, or form? And the other side is the need. And the need, there's no real definition for need. It depends upon what the judge feels the person may have a need or not. Unfortunately, when you go back to court each and every time, it also costs a significant amount of money to try to put in a motion for modification. You have to once again retain an attorney. Most of the time, people are not going to do it pro se. And then, again, fight it out in court at what could be substantial costs.
If one party in a divorce somehow rubs the judge the wrong way, can they be penalized for that because the judge can interpret it and maybe put a higher alimony rate?
Well, yeah, I mean, the judge can wake up on one side of the bed and decide one day to give permanent alimony for a case, and on the next day with the same exact set of circumstances, decide not to. It really is total arbitrary discretion on the judge. There's no formula. There's no limitations for duration right now. And those are the things that we really need to have put into the law. We want to be able to give a certain amount of judicial discretion because there's no two cases that's going to be exactly alike. So a certain amount of judicial discretion is necessary. But the way that it's happening now is that it's way too arbitrary. And they just have way too much authority to do whatever they want, whenever they want it.
Barry Finkel, do you want to respond?
I do. First, let me just say that without alimony reform, there already has been and every divorce lawyer would acknowledge this, a trend away from permanent alimony. The cases have been interpreted that lifestyle, which really used to be considered the primary factor in determining alimony, is no longer a super factor. It's not what everybody looks at and says, what is the marital lifestyle? If I can't achieve that marital lifestyle when I'm divorced, I'm entitled to permanent alimony. So I think that most of the judges are already inclined against permanent alimony, even without alimony reform, unless under certain circumstances which clearly justify it. I can tell you that in my 30 years, I can count on one hand how many times somebody in a marriage of less than 10 years has been awarded or is required to pay permanent alimony. That just doesn't occur unless there's some extreme circumstances. Now, I'm not saying it never happens, but in the one or two times that it may happen, there has to be circumstances to justify that. But it's not like it's a common occurrence. It just simply doesn't happen.
And what kind of circumstances would justify that?
Well, there may be a disability that may arise as a result of the marriage. Maybe there may be some physical abuse that may have occurred in a short-term marriage, which prevents the recipient spouse from earning funds afterwards. And that abuse or that disability is going to continue far into the future, which may justify a permanent alimony award. But those are the types of circumstances which I think everybody would agree would justify a permanent alimony award. And let me just comment a little on Debbie's interpretation about the income of subsequent spouses. The law is very clear that the income of subsequent spouses is not a factor. It's not relevant. It's not even discoverable in modification of alimony cases unless the party paying alimony is deliberately avoiding paying their alimony obligation because they're relying upon the income of the subsequent spouse. But just by simply getting married, Debbie cannot be forced to disclose her income or her assets. There are cases that are in every district hold that that's the case.
Well, what's the truth here?
But the reality and that theory, again, because I have actual cases, and I wish I could have even brought the people with me to state otherwise, where I have actual human beings where their judgments were different, where the current wives were asked to disclose their assets and were asked what are they earning, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, and for the case that I was referring to about less than 10 years, you're probably right in that it's rare for it to happen. But the particular case that I was talking about, the ex-wife was actually considered a felon by the judge, and that was the reason why the judge didn't feel she would be able to earn enough income in the future, and her ex-husband was ordered to pay permanent alimony, which I thought was just totally insane. But, okay, these are the types of judgments that we are seeing on a regular basis. We have hundreds, and I get emails every day describing other types of orders that are happening by judges. So while you say that it's rare, it is not rare. It's happening very, very regularly. And as far as family income, I've been a certified divorce financial analyst since 2005 and a financial advisor since 2000. So I have, 13 years of experience as well in the system, in the court system, seeing this on a regular basis as well. These laws have to be modified. They have to be changed because the letter of the law is interpreted very, very differently than the intent of the law.
We're speaking with financial advisor Alan Frischer, the founder of Florida Alimony Reform. We're also speaking with Debbie Leff Israel with the Second Wives Club and Barry Finkel, a family law and divorce attorney. On today's Topical Currents, we need to take a short break and we'll be right back. Please stay with us.
You can find Topical Currents on Facebook, a dedicated page with daily program descriptions, links to our guests, authors, and books. Facebook.com/topicalcurrents.
And 21 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. We continue our discussion about alimony. If you'd like to join in with a comment or question, you're welcome to 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email radio@WLRN.org. radio@WLRN.org. Barry Finkel, does the Florida Bar have a position on this?
The Florida Bar has taken a position that there probably should be continuing and evolving alimony reform in terms of continuing to determine when alimony may be appropriate in permanent situations or long-term marriage, short-term marriage. They did enact legislation a couple of years ago to address what most people consider to be a glitch in that the court could have awarded what we called bridge the gap alimony for 2 years and then defined what permanent alimony was, which was after 20 years, and there was a problem and said, well, what happens if there is a marriage of 10 years and 2 years of bridge the gap alimony is not enough, and obviously long-term alimony, permanent alimony is not appropriate. What they did was they determined that there in marriages between 7 and 17 years, There is something called durational alimony. That's considered a marriage of moderate duration, and the court can award alimony in an amount and in a length that would not exceed the length
of the
marriage.
Some people who complain about alimony, though, say that the attorneys, that there's profit in acrimony.
I don't think so. I don't see that, and I don't see people litigating to excess over the alimony amount. And I think that most good divorce lawyers try to resolve these cases without litigation. 85% or 90% of these cases resolve at mediation. We try cases maybe two or three times a year, and that's all. I think that good divorce lawyers understand what the ranges are, and I can tell you that after meeting with somebody at initial consultation and speaking with them for an hour or 90 minutes, you can tell what the range of settlement is, and most experienced lawyers can see that as well. And yes, there are some abusive lawyers out there who will look to litigate the case. But that's going to happen whether there's alimony reform or not. People are going to look at this and say, how much money can I make before I settle the case? That's not what the good people do with the respectable and lawyers that have integrity and have done this for a long time. And those people, they're known. The people that abuse the system are known among the lawyers. And eventually the litigants and the lawyers that try to resolve cases without trying to drive people into bankruptcy, they're known as well, and those are the people that get the cases.
Alan, did you want to comment?
Oh, I absolutely want to comment. I have to respectfully disagree with a lot of what Mr. Finkel just said. First of all, statistics are very, very hard to come by, so I don't understand how he can make a claim that 95% of cases settle, because I've been doing this for many, many years. I have not been able to find the statistics that actually show that, and we have searched very, very carefully. All I can go by are the hundreds, many, many, cases that I get across my desk on a regular basis that show that this is simply not the case, and the amounts of money that people are spending on divorce cases by going back to court trying to modify are horrific without ever getting substantial, if at all, modifications on this. So the hourly fees that attorneys are charging, the retainer fees that attorneys are charging, it's not necessarily because they are trying to milk the system. The system is allowing that to occur, and they're just taking advantage of it as good business people. If you want to look at it that way, that's fine. But in so doing, they're also taking advantage of people who are emotionally distraught at probably the worst and most challenging times of their lives. And this is something that needs to be changed and corrected.
Debbie, you wanted to respond?
Yes.
To Barry?
Barry, I was looking at your website, and just to quote you, you say, what hamstrings the system, though, is the inconsistencies born in a lack of guidelines that the courts must follow. It's unfair to all. And you go on to say, what most experienced family law attorneys agree upon is that some sort of revision is necessary to alleviate and to avoid inconsistent rulings. And this goes on, and you describe what happens and why there are problems. The American Bar Journal, ABA Journal, in February of last year, discusses that alimony is one of the most frequently litigated issues in family law. Most agree that divorcing spouses deserve more predictable outcomes. And just yesterday, an attorney in Miami, Theodore Enfield, came out in favor of our proposals in Florida alimony reform. All we're looking to do is make the outcomes fair. For example, someone who needs alimony because of the discretion of judges may not actually get it right now. So it's unfair in the other direction as well. Mm-hmm. And then you have a situation where, let's say someone is married 17 years, fully capable of earning a living, but because they're at that 17-year mark, both sets of lawyers are saying, well, you're in the long-term alimony range, you're going to receive permanent alimony. So why would a person go to trial and spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on a trial when they know what the judgment's going to be because they've hit that long-term alimony stage? The alimony, permanent alimony recipient is the only person in our society who has no responsibility for their financial well-being. None. It's all on the burden of the ex-spouse, and it could be there for decades after the divorce.
Right. And one of the things that you had mentioned is that you're taking the Florida Bar's position. I respect that, and I understand that, but I may have to ask, how many sessions, how many meetings did you have with leaders of the family section of the Florida Bar to discuss this? I know that I've been in at least three meetings with the leaders of the family section, and one of the last meetings that I've been in, they've actually come to me and said, now we really believe that there should be a lower standard of living after a divorce than was had during the marriage. And this is something last session that they were fighting tooth and nail against. They want to try to maintain the standard of living that was had during the marriage after a divorce. And they realize that that's an impossibility. I had a judge tell me once that the judges understand that that's an impossibility, so what they do is they put the burden on one of the parties, and at least they can get it right 50% of the time by maintaining the standard of living for one out of the two. Now, finally, the family section has come around, the president of the family section has come around, and agreed that there is, in fact, a lower standard of living after a divorce.
Mr. Finkel, yeah.
Let me just say that I think that common sense tells you that simply income that has typically supported one household cannot support two households in the same standard of living. So this is really a common sense issue, and I think that everybody understands in divorce cases that everybody's going to have to take a haircut. Everybody's going to have to pull in their belt straps and try to reduce their lifestyle to what is manageable within the income of the family. Let me just address Debbie's situation. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a 17-year marriage or a 20-year marriage. The recipient spouse has an obligation under Florida law to contribute to her own support. And if she is not doing that, we have what is called imputation of income. We can look and see what this recipient spouse is capable of doing based upon her work history, education, qualifications, earnings level in the community, and attribute an amount of income that she should be able to earn had she used her best efforts. And if she doesn't do that, the court is still going to assume that she is earning that money and will make the appropriate adjustment on the alimony award.
Again, that's theory and not necessarily practice because of the cases that I know. And I know you may have been in practice for 30 years, but I have seen hundreds of cases where that is not being applied.
I have a question regarding this. Do current laws provide rehabilitative plans for someone who's never been in the workplace?
The courts do not. The person has to actually submit a rehabilitative plan to the court.
I see.
If somebody wants rehabilitative alimony, they are required to submit a rehabilitative plan and outline what it is that they're intending to do and how much money they intend to earn and how long it's going to take.
That is correct.
Let's take a couple of calls. Our number, 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576. This caller is in Tampa. Nick, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I am a payer of permanent alimony. I went through a divorce about 6 years ago. My ex-wife filed. We were married for 17 years. And it was a vicious circus, to say the least. The amount of alimony that she was awarded was extremely high. And while there were two judges in the case that heard the case, one judge had no problem with awarding her attorney his rate of $350 an hour for me. And my failure to pay that on several occasions within a two-year period ended up with motions for willful contempt of court. Now, if I don't have the money, I don't have the money. And yet I was threatened with willful contempt of court and a writ of bodily attachment. Okay, one thing I'd like to say or ask is why in such a case there is no jury, because the Constitution clearly says in the Seventh Amendment that that litigants have the right to a jury trial for any civil matter where there's a discrepancy of $20 or more. Now, I realize that...
That might be a different can of worms, though.
But
right now, I think my opinion is that jury nullification overrides the judge. So, to be more specific, my ex used the same attorney that Hulk Hogan's ex-wife used. He charged $350 an hour plus $250 an hour for a forensic accountant. That's $600 an hour for someone that only made $13 an hour. And the burden of payment was put on me.
Barry,
okay, thanks for your call, Nick. We'll get answers off the air.
Barry, you want to respond?
Sure, I will. I you know, the issue about contempt is something that I know that everybody is concerned about, but let me just be clear on what the law provides. A paying spouse, if he does not pay his alimony or his attorney's fees award, cannot be held in contempt if he does not have the ability to pay it. You have to be found to be in willful contempt. You have to be found that you have the ability and you're just refusing to abide by the court order. If you don't have the ability to pay it, if you have lost your job, if you don't have the money in the bank, if they can't point to some source of payment, assets, or income, then you will not be held in contempt. You will not be incarcerated. And the appellate courts are very quick to respond to those cases where somebody is held in contempt, and they routinely reverse those cases in case somebody is held in contempt or incarcerated.
Okay. Debbie?
What I've heard is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Barry, is that people are usually awarded $1 of alimony a month when that's the case?
No, that's rare. That's called nominal alimony, and only in certain circumstances would that occur. But it's when you say that, it's most people, and that's regular, it does not happen. It's irregular.
Okay, so what happens when a person just doesn't have the money to pay? What do you see as happening?
They have a right to modification, if it's appropriate.
But I don't does it get terminated?
It may very well get terminated. If somebody has no, if the change of circumstances is that somebody does not have the ability to pay alimony anymore, then it would be appropriate to terminate alimony. The
but
courts
if it's
have
not
the ability.
Anymore,
hold on. The
if
courts
it's not
have
anymore.
The courts have the ability to terminate or reduce alimony.
All right. The problem that I see is that people are back and forth into court. One wants to modify it up. One wants to modify it down. And the bottom line is that sometimes and oftentimes the recipient has absolutely no responsibility, despite the possibility of an imputation to income. Where people could be in their mid-40s, let's say, and be retired and have, you know, this permanent annuity for the rest of their lives, and they don't have to worry about anything, and they just, you know, live the life. And that's just not right for all us other working folks. Yeah. I could have received permanent alimony, by the way. I just want you to realize that I didn't want to be connected to an ex-spouse the rest of my life. I didn't think it was a healthy thing to do. And I don't think it's healthy for the recipients either. They don't move on with their lives. It's just not healthy.
We're going to talk more about that. It's on today's Topical Currents. We're speaking about alimony, reform or not, with Alan Frischer, the founder of FAR, Florida Alimony Reform, Debbie Israel, and Barry Finkel, a family law and divorce attorney. Stay with us, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. We're speaking about alimony with Alan Frischer, the founder of Florida Alimony Reform, Debbie Leff Israel, the founder of the Second Wife's Club, and family law and divorce attorney Barry Finkel. I'm Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. And when we were going to break, we were talking about, I was going to ask if permanent alimony doesn't tie exes together emotionally for life. And that aspect of it.
You know, what happens is it also creates a lot of problems with the children because the parents are fighting forever. In a case where you know alimony will end after a given period of time, people accept their fate. No one likes to pay alimony, but people accept their fate when they know there's an end date. Whereas when it's for life, there's constant bitterness, constant fighting. Who do you think gets hurt by it most? The children? You know, they're the innocent victims of this. Even if they're adult children, to see their parents constantly fighting and arguing and in and out of court is just not healthy. And I'll tell you something. You know, I am a college professor, and when I'm home during the summer, frankly, sometimes I get bored. You know, I have hobbies, but I think about what is it like to not have any job and not do anything. Your children are grown. You don't do anything. No wonder why so many of these alimony recipients, permanent alimony recipients, are so miserable, because they don't have a purpose. They're not self-actualized. They're not fulfilled.
And on a financial end of things, a lot of times when you're hit with permanent alimony and you have to, you're ordered to pay it, you don't want to earn more money. You don't want to fulfill, you know, your basic need to try to succeed in life, because if you do earn more money, well, guess what? If the recipient understands that, she could pull you, let's say it's the husband that's paying, she would be able to pull you back to court and try to upwardly modify her alimony. If that's the case and the judge sees you have made more money, substantial amount of more money, the judge can then impute more of an alimony payment on you. So it really doesn't enable you the ability to work hard to try to succeed in life either.
Debbie Leff Israel, how about some contact information for people who want to learn more about the Second Wives Club?
Our main website is floridaalimonyreform.com, and I can be personally reached through my email at secondwivesclubfl@gmail.com.
And how about FAR, Alan Frischer?
Alan Frischer, I believe, can be reached at info@floridaalimonyreform.com.
Okay, and Barry?
If anybody has any questions regarding their alimony obligations or their right to receive alimony, they can call me at my offices in Fort Lauderdale at 954-776-1414.
I guess this speaks well for the single life.
Yeah. I have a question for Alan. Would these new laws, if passed, be retroactive for those already paying permanent alimony? And if so, wouldn't that overburden an already overwhelmed court system?
Excellent questions. We have in our proposed bill, yes, that we would like the law to be retroactive. We feel that there's no constitutional issue. As a matter of fact, we feel it might be unconstitutional if it were not enabled to be retroactive. And we do not believe it would overburden the court system. We handle that in certain ways with our proposal, in that we've laddered the approach. If you've been married a certain number of years, you can go back, let's say next year, another number of years, you can go back in 2014 and in 2015, so as not to burden the court system. And you would have to actually receive at least a 25% benefit from going back to court.
Okay.
And that would mean, of course, if you can eliminate your alimony, that would be at least, you know, the 25% benefit. But if you were just hit with a certain amount of alimony for a certain amount of years, we've incorporated a formula and or a percentage within our proposed bill, so you can actually do the figuring or use a financial advisor to help you do the figuring to see whether or not you would benefit by at least 25%, sort of like a mortgage. You know, you don't want to refinance your mortgage if it's going to cost you more to do so than refinancing. You don't want to go back to court if the costs are going to cost you more than you would actually get from the benefit of modifying your alimony.
One comment I'd like to add to what Alan said is that if there were less litigation in the courts over alimony the way they currently are right now, the lifetime litigation, the courts would be less overburdened.
Hmm.
Let's take a call or two on our program. Our number is 1-800-743-WLRN. This is Stuart. He's in Miami. Hi there.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm one of those that's listening very intently. My divorce happened in 2007, and I'm still red and chapped. And I'll tell you, the lawyers didn't help out any of the situations, and it wasn't just in my case. In most of the reading, the lawyers are what makes the situation worse. But let me offer a solution. How about, you know, divorce systems around the world are a little bit different, some maybe even better than ours. But how about for our divorces, 7 years, you know, marriage is a contract, right? How about 7 years with options to renew? That way, if at 7 years you want to renew and you go over the 10-year mark, then shame on you. At 7 years, the parties can call it off. The lawyers can make a little money drafting the initial contract, and we don't have to pay out our, you know what, after the divorce.
What about till death do us part?
Well, then we need to take that out. yeah, we have to take that one out. But I'll wait for any of the responses. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just comment on that for one moment? We have something that is called prenuptial agreements or antenuptial agreements. That allows people to enter into contracts before they get married to provide what would happen in the event of a divorce or in the event of death. If people are very concerned about their exposure to alimony or their exposure to losing assets, then they can provide for that in an antenuptial agreement. The only thing that you can't provide for in an antenuptial agreement are matters relating to children, child support, time sharing, things like that. But if people are very concerned about that, there are safeguards in place. You can go ahead and enter into an agreement to say what would happen if we got divorced after 1 year, 5 years, 15 years, and provide for alimony amounts to be paid. They're fully enforceable. The courts are loath to set aside those agreements and not recognize them. And we do a lot of prenuptial agreements as a way to avoid these types of problems that people are anticipating if they get divorced.
It's funny, if the laws were fair, prenuptial agreements wouldn't be necessary. That's the irony of it. And people, when they're young and in love, don't think of prenuptial agreements. The second marriage, you're savvy, and yes, you will have a prenuptial agreement. But the first marriage, when you're young and naive, unless you're a lawyer or have a parent or a relative that's a lawyer advising you, people don't do that. And like I said, if the laws were fair, a prenuptial agreement wouldn't even be a real necessity. And that is, again, another income stream for attorneys.
One of the most interesting parts about prenuptial agreements, they don't necessarily take into account the order of temporary alimony. You could have a prenuptial agreement, which, by the way, are contested all the time. But if, let's assume it was ironclad and not contested, the object of temporary alimony is never addressed, and because of the way the laws are written, temporary alimony can be forced to be paid for 2-3 years until you can actually get to court, and that amount of money is never refunded to the person that had to pay that.
Well, you know, listen, I thought we were talking about permanent alimony. What's clear to me is that what Farr wants to do and what Ms. Israel want to do is have a total eradication of alimony.
That's not true.
You know, for somebody to complain about, you know, paying temporary alimony for 2 years is just is completely absurd. I didn't know that that was the topic that we were really discussing here. First, permanent is not good, and then, you know, 2 years of alimony is not good. I think that, you know, only what everybody's
happy that there's no alimony. I think Mr. Frischer just wants the temporary alimony to be counted towards the total award. That's, I think, what he's referring to. We are not anti-alimony.
Well, I think everybody wants that. That would be wonderful.
Let me make this clear, 1,000% clear. We are not anti-alimony. Alimony is necessary in many cases. We are proposing that alimony just have a limit, a duration. Even on a long-term marriage, let's say a 20-year marriage, 10 years of alimony, they've received half the assets of the marriage, especially if it's an older couple where the assets are larger, they receive half the estate. You know, we're just asking for limits and reasonable guidelines. We're not asking for an eradication of alimony.
Right, Mr. Finkel, I didn't bring up prenup. That was actually brought up by you. I was just stating a fact of what happens in prenups. When you're trying to avoid the issues of a pending divorce, this is something that people have to also realize, that the actual alimony, or at least temporary alimony, may not be able to be avoided with a prenup.
Well, you also have prevailing party fee provisions, and if somebody doesn't have a basis to challenge an agreement, and they do it anyway, they're going to get hit for attorney's fees. That's valid and enforceable. So it's going to discourage somebody from trying to drag out the divorce case by making a bogus challenge for a prenuptial agreement that doesn't really have a basis.
It's today's Topical Currents. Our topic is alimony and alimony reform. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take some calls.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. The subject is alimony. We're speaking with Alan Frischer, financial advisor and the founder of Florida Alimony Reform, FAR. Also, Debbie Leff Israel. She is the founder of the Second Wives Club, and family law and divorce attorney Barry Finkel. And Bonnie Berman here with Joseph Cooper. We do have an emailer, Lloyd in Miami, who's never been married and has a few questions. First, he wants to make sure we're talking about alimony and not child support, and are they different?
We haven't touched on child support.
Right,
at all.
But they're very different. So just to clarify that they're very different, we're talking about alimony and not child support. And he wants to know if it's based on whether one spouse, male or female, has not been working for a considerable period of the marital union that determines if alimony is awarded.
That is one of the factors, and that's what we typically see in long-term marriages, is that one party has sacrificed their careers in order to stay home, take care of the children, take care of the home, so the earning spouse can go out and succeed and make a living.
Well, that old thing of putting hubby through college.
Well, you know, that's what it is, and somebody has sacrificed. So when you talk about after a 20-year marriage and saying, well, you know, 10 years of alimony is appropriate, that's just not the case. That's just not appropriate, because if somebody did sacrifice and somebody had the ability to pursue their career and become a substantial earner and sacrifice that, then they have to share in the partnership. You know, marriage is viewed as a true partnership.
But they do share the partnership with the equitable distribution.
Only for a short period of time. After that, you're on your own, and that's what's not appropriate. And in a situation where you have somebody who's been married for 25 years and 10 years, and now the husband is now 50 years old, and now the wife is 40 years old, and she has no more alimony, and her career, her prime earning years, because she hasn't worked, have now passed her by, and the husband continues to earn substantial amounts of money and live a lifestyle, I think that's what engenders more acrimony between the parties and
that
would affect the children.
Let's say that lawyers became abolished in the United States. Would you reinvent yourself, or would you go on welfare?
I mean, I'm not even going to dignify that. I just don't understand
the question.
No, but
it's a fact, because there are careers and professions that do become they're either outsourced or they die or whatever. The careers are no longer, and people have to reinvent themselves.
And well, if they both had to do that, that would be fine. If the husband could reinvent himself and stop working in his career and give up his medical practice.
Let one person speak at a time.
And give up his medical practice and find a new job, all of a sudden, then maybe they're on equal footing. But to allow him to continue, and then say to her, now she has to start all over and find something.
She's not starting from scratch. She's receiving, if it's a doctor, she's receiving half the marital assets or more, and that's a substantial amount of money that she would have never earned on her own.
The problem is that these are all fact-intensive cases. You know, when you say she's going to be receiving a substantial amount of assets, we don't know that. You have no idea how much money people are receiving as part of equitable distribution.
Let's take a call or two. We've got Patty in Hollywood. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling regarding, I never wanted a contentious divorce. I never asked for alimony. And the assumption was that he wasn't earning enough. Although I could not go, I had a couple promotions that were out of state, and our divorce say I could not leave the state. So there were a couple years that my income dropped significantly, and I didn't want to spend all my money in a lawyer. I wanted any money that we had when we got divorced to actually, for us to move on and have a happy life. If anything that I can do after years, my daughter is 22 now. I know that he didn't put what he was really making in our divorce decree. I just take his word for it. I really felt that he, as a dad and a person that I loved once, and he loved me once, I thought that he will have good faith. And
okay, let's get an answer for you, Patty.
Well, number one, if you're not receiving alimony, unless there was a reservation of jurisdiction or, as Debbie mentioned before, a nominal alimony award, then you would be precluded. You would not be able to go back and get alimony for the first time years after your divorce. As far as any misrepresentations that may have been made by your husband, the court does allow you to go back at any time if there was a misrepresentation on a financial affidavit, if he understated his income or failed to include assets at any time. You can go back and try to set aside the agreement if you believe there was some fraud involved.
How much would that cost, Barry, for her to do something like that?
It would all depend on the case, and I'm not going to quote you an amount of money that would cost. It could cost, you know, a couple of $1,000s. It could cost a tremendous amount of money. I just don't know what would happen.
We're also talking in general terms, not giving any specific legal
advice.
Absolutely.
Right. But that's my point. You know, the cost of going to court to try to modify can also be substantial depending upon, like Barry said, the case involved. One thing I did want to say previously when we mentioned the sacrifices that are made by one spouse to another, sometimes it's also a choice. Sometimes it's the choice of the woman wanting to raise children, and it's a viable choice and an appropriate choice for the couple to make. So it's, you know, raising children is not necessarily a sacrifice. It's actually, for many women, a pleasure. And for many men, it would be a pleasure had they not needed to provide for the family. So sometimes that also is indeed the case. But our court systems do not look at it that way. You know, what we're trying to do with Florida alimony reform is to create, you know, fairness within the law. We want, and we believe that the 50% of the length of the marriage as the default duration, as opposed to a potential of permanent alimony. We want to eliminate permanent alimony from the statutes, but we do believe that a certain amount of alimony is appropriate for a certain amount of time.
Alan, everything that Barry is suggesting, you can fix this, you can fix that, and like you said, at what cost all these fixes, what's the cost, and who's really benefiting from it?
I haven't suggested that, but I think that the legislature is doing a good job in evolving their alimony laws. And as somebody that's been in the trenches, I just don't see the abuse that everybody is talking about that's behind alimony reform. I think it is the genesis of this is some people that are unhappy, a small number of people.
And
we don't see
number.
It relatively is. And we don't see the types of abuses that somebody that is there. And when you talk about you don't see the statistics, you know, mediators are required to remit their mediation statistics as to how many cases settle and don't settle. And I'm telling you that the number is between 80 and 90% as to cases that settle at mediation.
People
so the vast number
because
of cases,
they're strong-armed.
You know, again, generalities. And, you know, what she's doing is shoehorning all the facts in every different case into what – into what they believe is appropriate for alimony reform.
It's
and it is a fact-intensive investigation. Every case is different. Some people maybe are strong-armed into settling. Others just realize that the facts are what the facts are, and they justify a settlement. But it's not because in every case, you know, somebody is getting the short end. It doesn't happen.
We're never saying every case, but certainly we do have over 3,000 members right now that seem to have difficulty and challenges with the law. That's a substantial number of members.
We've run out of time. It's been a very interesting discussion, and I certainly want to thank those who called in that we couldn't get to. We've been speaking with financial advisor Alan Frischer. He's the founder of Florida Alimony Reform. Also, we've been speaking with Debbie Leff Israel, and she's the founder of the Second Wife's Club, and also family law and divorce attorney Barry Finkel. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that wraps up today's edition. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Our apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. We have free audio archives and digital downloads of many past programs at our website, WLRN.org. And listeners may also check out the Topical Currents Facebook page for links, discussions, and more. Tomorrow's program begins with info about Florida's Take Stock in Children program. Deserving low-income students receive many benefits. And more, Linda Gassenheimer's annual Super Bowl segment, the Gnarlin Style Bash. And today's calendar, on this day in 1835, 178 years ago, the first attempt on a U.S. president's life. A would-be assassin's pistol misfires near Andrew Jackson. In the trial that followed, the prosecutor was Francis Scott Key. Also on this day in 1930, 83 years ago, the birth of actor Gene Hackman in San Bernardino, California. The winner of two Oscars, in the early 1960s, he was close to actors Dustin Hoffman and Robert Duvall, all struggling in New York. One more while we consider enhanced interrogation. On this day, 1941, 72 years ago, the birth of former Vice President Dick Cheney in Lincoln, Nebraska. He's been a presidential chief of staff, congressman, and secretary of defense. Our theme music, created by Michael Levine. We leave with a thought from Vice President Cheney, who suffered 5 heart attacks since 1978. Quote, conservation may be a sign of personal virtue, but it's not a sufficient basis for a sound, comprehensive energy policy. This is Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.